I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The municipal election in Vancouver is this Saturday, the 19th, and we continue looking at the issues, the candidates, and more with my guest now, Mark Hasiuk. He's a columnist at the Vancouver Courier, a commentator on various media, and the host of the Mark Hasiuk Show on Roadkill Radio. That's Thursdays at themarkhasiukshow.com. We'll ask Mr. Hasiuk about that as well as the election from his vantage point less than a week before the vote. I'll ask him about Occupy Vancouver too. His website is at markhasiuk.com. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Mark Hasiuk. Good morning, Mr. Hasiuk.
Morning, Joe. Good to be with you again.
Thanks for joining us. So there's a line in your bio at the Courier. It says, your views are broadsides against Vancouver's comfortable liberal culture. A couple of years now into the column, how do you think you're doing?
I think I'm doing okay. I didn't write that that sentence. I might disagree with that a little bit. But I'm having a great time with it. It's always fun to express your opinions, and I relish it at times. So, yeah, it's great.
Is it frustrating, though, that we are in this town known for this sort of, as the line says in the bio, a comfortable liberal culture?
I don't know if it's frustrating, Joe. I mean, we live in a beautiful city, and we're very, very, very lucky. You mentioned Occupy Vancouver. I think a lot of the people that are involved in that protest now lack a worldly perspective. They don't have a sense of history, and they don't have a sense of the world. I am not a world traveler by any stretch, but I understand how lucky we are in this city, and I think that is something that everybody should think about when we're doing politics in this town and we're criticizing people. We still have it very, very good compared to the vast majority of the citizens of this earth and the vast majority of people throughout history.
Now, the Occupy Vancouver seems to be the dominant issue in this campaign,
yeah.
Certainly in the last several weeks. Where are we with that, and how have you felt that the mayor's done with regards to handling this issue? I mean, where is he, I guess, on this today?
Well, that's the big question. Where is he? I mean, you know, it's very easy to criticize public officials when stuff like this goes on. But in this case, I believe Robertson deserves all the criticism he's getting, and much more, actually. He bungled this thing from the beginning by demonstrating a hallmark of his administration, which is to be very reckless and irresponsible at the outset of any event. We saw it with the Stanley Cup ride. I think there are direct parallels between how Robertson handled the fan zones during the Stanley Cup run, particularly during the Stanley Cup final, when he invited more than 100,000 people into the downtown core with really not much of a plan. If you remember at the beginning of Occupy Vancouver on October 15th, Robertson said that the folks could stay camped in front of the art gallery forever, as long as they obeyed laws and there weren't any overriding health issues. Now, that is a very reckless statement for any mayor to make. And, you know, part of me sympathizes with the protesters. They see the mayor say this. They see City Hall say this. And then as the protest had dragged on and public sentiment kind of turned against it, the mayor slowly changed his tune. And we had this tragic death of that 23-year-old woman from Victoria who we now know did die of an overdose. In crass political terms, that was a good thing for the Robertson re-election campaign, because he had really boxed himself into a corner. He couldn't totally flip-flop and say that he wanted the protest gone. But after that tragic death, it kind of gave him cover to be able to say, well, you know, the circumstances have changed now because someone has died. So I think he's really bungled it from the beginning. It really shows a lack of leadership, in my opinion.
And has Suzanne Anton of the NPA, have they really gained from his bungling?
Well, they've gained from his bungling, yes. And a better campaign and a better candidate would have been able to capitalize more on this. I still think that it's the it is the main issue in the campaign now. And if you look at the recent polls, Joe, we had the last public opinion poll, that the latest actually, was a robo poll that puts the numbers somewhere between, I had it in front of me, Joe, do you have the latest numbers? It's something like 48-42 in favor of, I think, Robertson has a 6-point lead over Anton. And you can attribute that close race, or the tightening of the race, directly to Occupy Vancouver. Remember, Joe, in 2008, MPA candidate Peter Ladner led a divided MPA party into the election, and he still got more than 48,000 votes. There's a strong, hardcore MPA voting bloc that the MPA can rely on. The last week's Abingdon poll showed that the majority, the plurality of Vancouverites, 53%, believe Robertson's handling has mishandled the Occupy Vancouver. That's the number that Vision Vancouver is really worried about. So you had last election Ladner get more than 48,000 votes when only 30% of eligible Vancouver voters went to the polls. I believe that Occupy Vancouver has the potential to bring some of that 70% who didn't vote last time around into the voting booth, and I think they are going to vote against the mayor's handling of Occupy Vancouver. I think it's very dangerous for Vision. I think this race is neck and neck right now because of Occupy Vancouver. I really do.
Well, what about the feeling, and this is what I get from reading people online, is that they may not necessarily, maybe people don't like Robertson, they don't like Vision. That doesn't mean that they'll vote NPA. There's a lot of disaffected people on the left who will probably vote for some of these independents, and we're hearing a lot about two independents in particular, Sandy Garasino and Adrian Carr, and then also this NSV party, the Neighborhoods for Sustainable Vancouver. They're getting a lot of play in at least online in the media that I see.
No, I agree with you, John. I think that could be a big, big story after next Saturday's election. I don't know if those two people you mentioned will get elected. In our strident party system here in Vancouver, it's nearly impossible to break that $50,000 vote threshold required to win a council seat. But like you said, they could steal a lot of votes. I think that's possible. And Sandy Garasino, is that how you pronounce it?
Garasino?
She brought up a very interesting issue last week that the two front runners in the mayoral race have avoided like the plague, and that is speculative real estate and the buying up of large chunks of the housing market by people from China, from mainland China. You know, that is a hot button issue. It pulls a lot of strings, but that's something that needs to be part of the debate. That when you think about it, you think of some of the other things that people have been talking about this election issue, backyard chickens and that type of thing. Fine, you want to talk about that, good, but the future of Vancouver is all about housing. It's about affordability. No other issue will affect the landscape of this city in all aspects, culturally, economically, more so than the issue of housing. And the issue of Chinese people buying up property here in Vancouver is a big part of that. It's a huge element of why everything is so expensive in Vancouver. So I think that is a very interesting issue that she brought up, and I respect her for that.
But are there solutions, though? I mean, do you think any of the candidates have a solution to the affordability question? I mean, that's something that all the guests that I've had on the program so far about this campaign have each of them have brought up the issue of affordability, whether you're buying or selling property or renting. And housing especially, and I think this goes into Occupy Vancouver and the issues that they're talking about, right?
Right. And you're exactly right that there's very little, barring really radical policy, like a moratorium on development permits or something like that, there's very little that a municipal government can do to affect free market forces in a capitalist democracy. There's very little they can do about that. That's why they don't want to talk about it half the time. They don't want to seem impotent. Right, but this China thing is something that you could erect barriers to this kind of foreign ownership of local property. You could do that, and that's something that you could do. But I agree with you that there's not a lot you can do outside of that.
Now, you back to Occupy Vancouver. You've been to the encampment.
Several times.
Yeah, what's your experience like there? When you talk to the people down there, have they got legitimate points?
Well, they did at the beginning. Protest is a fundamental part of democracy, and people's knee-jerk reaction to the protests, I didn't think it was fair. I mean, they were getting together to express a political opinion, and I think everybody should support that in a democracy. They weren't hurting anybody at that point in time, and the fundamental arguments they had at the beginning. There definitely are sound arguments that, yeah, there is a lot of greed. There is a lot of top-down, a disparity in incomes. And, that should be talked about. At the same time, there was kind of a conflation, even in the beginning, between American and Canadian issues. The federal regulation we have here in Canada largely prevented the big problems they had in the States, the predatory lending, the derivative swapping, all that type of thing. So that's something that people need to keep in mind. I mean, our economy is the envy of the Western world because we had those regulations. A lot of the kids down there, I think, were a little bit misinformed in that way. But at the start of the protest, I think it was totally legitimate. Now, it's not to call the protest now, I think, is a bit of a misnomer. It's not really. It's more of a squatters' camp. The political aims now are, the number one goal is to remain at the site. I mean, that is the number one issue now. And all the other issues that might have been represented earlier have kind of fallen away. I believe that they will be largely wiped away before people go to the polls on Saturday.
And do you think forcibly?
Yes, I do. And I said that 3 weeks ago. I don't think that the smart brains at Vision Vancouver are going to allow 30 or 40 disgruntled folk outside the art gallery to sink their campaign.
On the on the issue of council's makeup after the 19th, you mentioned that the race is neck and neck, and I'm assuming that's the Robertson-Anton race.
Yes.
In terms of council, will we see a sort of divided council amongst the parties?
I think so. I think voters at any government level, whatever election you're voting in, they like balance. And I don't think that we'll see what we have now again. At least for the next 3 years. Yeah. Right now we're Vision cope heavy with only one MPA councillor. I think you'll see at least three MPA councillors elected alongside Anton. I think you could pencil in Mike Klassen right away. Sean Bickerton has a very good shot. And my dark horse for the MPA is a guy named Francis Wong. He's not well known in the city, but he is well known in Chinatown, and he's shaken a lot of hands over the past 10 years. He's got a resume that he's been a director of this and a director of that, and he's met a lot of people, especially in the Chinese Canadian community. So I think you'll see definitely a few more MPA faces and a couple of older Vision faces on the way out.
Like Raymond Louis. Would that be one?
No, I don't know if Louis would go, but I think Tim Stevenson is done at council. Yeah. I think he's gone. Heather Deal, I don't think she's going to make the cut this time either. But Louis and Reimer and Jeff Meggs, I think those people will remain.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned off the top the Mark Hashik show. That's been, what, now about a month since you started that?
Yeah, about 6 weeks, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. It's one guest a week. Is that how it works?
Yeah, one guest a week, and I'm really just getting my feet wet with this online broadcasting thing. I think I mentioned to you via email there, and I'm just having fun with it right now. It's really we're kind of on a shoestring budget, and one cool thing about it is, as my role as a columnist in the city, I have to stay hyper local. Just write about Vancouver stuff,
yeah.
But as you know, online, you know, the world is your oyster, so I can talk about events and interview people from, you know, across Canada and around the world if I want. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you had the program last week was on Swiss Air Flight 111.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fascinating. I mean, I never really... I remember reading about that piece that they did at the Fifth Estate on it, and I just never really thought about it, and then listening to the guy you had on it. The only advice I'll give you, Mark, is don't afraid to have a good pin.
A good pen.
A good pen, yeah. You're on TV, so I figured, you know, don't get like a little clicky pen or a ballpoint.
Yeah.
You know, have a nice pen, you know.
Very good, yeah.
If you use a fountain pen, you know, you look classier, right? Mark, I appreciate your time today. You're doubtless busy covering this campaign, but we'll be watching the Mark Hashik Show every week.
All right, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thanks. The website, themarkhashikshow.com, and of course the column that's in the Vancouver Courier. You can read that online or when they deliver it to your house here in Vancouver. The Vancouver Courier's Mark Hashik on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.